2CC Richard Perno podcast.
Luke Smith, financial planner at our mates at Envision Financial. Afternoon.
A bit of rain.
A little fresh. Tell me, you know, this is a question without notice, Luke.
Yep.
What kind of ramifications, knock-on effect, has the Banking Royal Commission provided other than the banks finally realising that they're humans and they've done this for years and years and years? But a financial institution's plan is going to be affected by this?
Look, very much so. I think they've missed the boat on this quite badly. Because the talk in my industry now is the removal of ongoing commission payments on insurance products, and we've seen mortgage brokers talk about having trail removed on home loans.
What's that?
So when someone goes to a mortgage broker and says, can you do some work for me?
Sure.
They are remunerated by the bank in the form of a payment. And similarly in the insurance industry, rather than a client coming and saying, well, you can pay a fee, that is an option. But most people say, well, if you're remunerated from the insurance company, then that's okay, they don't have to pay us. And in a lot of instances, that allows them the flexibility to get the cover that they may not be able to afford to pay for the advice.
Yeah.
To then turn around and take reoccurring revenue off hardworking advisors and mortgage brokers and potentially financially destroy them, what's the outcome going to be? The outcome would be, Royal Commission was about the behaviour of the banks on the consumer.
Yes.
The rules that they've brought out or proposed to change could financially bankrupt a number of advisors and a number of businesses, making it too hard to sustain a business. Where's the consumer going to go? Back to the bank?
Back to the banks.
Because I'm pretty sure the bank I'm with has never rung and told me that there's a good home loan deal at another bank.
No.
So if they want to protect the consumer and have independence and all the things that they harp on about, they've just thrown thrown the mud in the wrong direction. Because the bank stocks this week have gone through the roof.
Yes.
That says one thing. They've got out of jail and it's not what they were expecting. Because myself and a number of colleagues, we expected, like most of the country did, there'll be ramifications here. And people should be punished for what's happened from what the bank has done.
Yeah. And, you know, you see the heads of these banks, you know, oh, I'm sorry, we're going to fix all this stuff. They're still, Luke, aren't they, going to walk away with their gold watches and their payouts?
They've targeted... You can't target mortgage brokers and financial planners that are not associated with a bank and punish them for the behaviour of a lending institution like the major banks. It's like dropping a building on an egg. I'm dumbfounded that somebody could miss the mark. He's obviously an intelligent gentleman, but he's either misinformed or there's an agenda about something else that someone hasn't...
That's still hidden.
So hopefully,
before it gets to the point of being a white paper or a green paper than a white paper in legislation, they will seek advice from the likes of yourself and financial planners to say, is this going to have a knock-on effect that could knock you out of the game?
There should be some, you know, some of the various associations around the country should be lobbying this, because ultimately the consumer will miss out, because what was a service funded by the banks will then become something that may be unaffordable to the consumer. And at the end of the day, we're here to provide a service to the consumer in the best of our ability.
And for the least cost, for the least fees,
for something that's financially viable.
You know, what got up my nose too, Luke, was that one of the heads rolled. Well, he should have been sacked rather than, oh, I'm stepping down. Two nights ago, he was saying, oh, you know, we're all transparent now. We're getting it right. We've got it wrong. It didn't happen overnight, this ripping off of the clients, of the customers. Mm. This went on for years and years and years. They were robbing from the grave in a lot of instances. You know, I mean, when I come to you at Envision and I pay a fee, I know I'm going to get something. There were many who were paying a fee for a service they never received from the bank, and this didn't happen in the last 2 weeks.
Correct.
This happened years ago, and it went on and on and on. Yet the heads of the banks, Luke, were saying, oh, look, you know, we didn't keep our eye on the ball. Bull, you knew what was going on.
To put it into context for the listeners out there, it'd be like going to have a haircut, and then the hairdressers association says that after Richard's coming for a haircut at 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, in 3 weeks' time, they need to come out to your house and just check to see how your hair's growing.
Mm.
But you can't charge for that.
No.
You can't bill for that.
No.
And they're going to mandate that in legislation to make sure that these things happen. So, like most of these things, they'll swing so far out into Ridiculousville that they need to try and get some advice and ensure the sustainability of the industry and protect those that do work hard, that aren't the major banks, without destroying people's livelihoods. And, you know, some older advisors out there with, you know, large businesses, they provided good service for 30 plus years.
Yeah.
could be financially destitute if some of these things are passed.
God, I hope they see sense.
Correct.
And they seek advice, Luke.
Let's hope so. Let's hope they're not that arrogant.
Luke Smith, financial planner at Envision Financial. You can call him now on 6255-1206. If you'd like to make an appointment, first visit, no cost at all. You can see him upstairs at the end of Townsend Street, 4452 Townsend Street in Phillip, 6260-4749. Yeah, I just hope they see the light of day. It's 21 to 5. You've got me here again. Infrastructure assets. What are infrastructure? So, it sounds like a road.
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. That's one option. So, today we're talking about infrastructure assets. Last week we spoke about asset allocation.
Does that mean I've got to own a bridge?
Well, potentially, yeah. You've hit the nail. In its simplest form, that's exactly what an infrastructure fund does. An infrastructure fund is a form of investment in a sector of asset. So we spoke last week about cutting up your portfolio into different sectors to try and mitigate risk. Infrastructure is very topical because it is exactly that. It is a fund that invests in a range of high-cost physical assets.
You can't go wrong, can you?
Well, and this again is about tying the risk profile to the assets that you hold. So if we think about what could be in that bucket, we've got phone towers, roads, ports, airports.
Bridges.
Bridges.
Yeah.
Power stations. So they're generally high capital assets that are regulated in some way by the government. So take the M5.
Yeah.
Every time you drive on that, pay a fee. So the nice thing about infrastructure assets are they are generally regulated. You can diversify what you hold. Obviously, you don't want one thing.
No.
But if you've got 15 different assets in a portfolio, they are generally pretty resilient to a downturn in the market because people still drive, people still fly, people still need power, people still get on a boat, you need to ship things around the world. So they are assets that are large, they're expensive, they're high barrier to entry, and they are generally regulated by either the government or they're privately owned, and the government oversees that sector.
So there's a bit of protection in there from your asset, your asset?
They're generally something that is, I say, because it's regulated, the income stream normally increases in line with or above inflation. So people like them in a portfolio because they have a low correlation, okay, to other sectors. So where equities might be going up and down off the back of the Royal Commission, infrastructure just plods along and does its thing. Now, they're not without risk. I need to say that. Obviously, any investment has risk, and you need to make sure that your risk profile is akin to what you're going to buy. But some examples of where infrastructure can come under pressure is, for example, when that bridge collapsed in Italy.
Yes.
Okay. Someone will own that bridge and there will be ramifications. There's a massive power company in America, in California, associated with the bushfires there. So they're not...
What about the dam that collapsed too?
Well, quite possibly.
Yeah.
So infrastructure is a good way to get an asset in your portfolio that has a low correlation or a low similarity to other assets.
How do you get this asset?
Well, you can buy that in a managed fund.
Right.
So you can go to specific fund managers that specialise in this area, and there are a number in Australia.
Never would have thought of it.
And you can you can buy units in a managed fund, just like you can with Australian shares or fixed interest or international, and it forms part of the portfolio. Now, why would you have it in a portfolio? They'll give you some protections in time of weakness. Okay, so if equities come off a lot, like a GFC, a global financial crisis, you would expect the valuation of the asset in the infrastructure sector to potentially be less volatile than a bank share because they're big, they're boring, and they move slowly, which is great because that's why you have them. They also provide good, strong income. You'll generally get sort of 4-6% in relation to the dividend profile of the asset. So they're good for retirees because they pay a good regular income stream.
Are they very costly?
Well, that would be...
It's high-end stuff, isn't it, really?
Well, they are in isolation, if you think about what it would cost to build a bridge, to build a toll road. But they're like most things. There's a lot of capital expenditure in the creation, but then once it's up and going, you're then collecting the toll roads for everybody that's driving on it, and once it's been built, it's built.
Yeah.
So there's obviously a greenfields period where they're building and building and building. There's a lot of capital expenditure. But then once the project's finished and you're collecting that revenue, it's almost an annuity-style fee because people drive down the M5. time is money. So people will pay to drive through, for example, the Cross City Tunnel, as an example. People would know that, because if that saves you half an hour and you're a tradie and you can get three more jobs done, you don't mind paying whatever the toll is to be on time and earn your money elsewhere. So infrastructure assets are good because they can be locally or internationally based. People will always continue to use them. They're generally pretty recession-proof, and they have a low, as I say, a low correlation to other assets. So they're giving you some protection.
Yeah, I would have never thought of buying a bridge or a road. You know?
Well, you might own a few nuts in there by comparison, but you know, it's about, again, spreading out your asset allocation and not having all your eggs in one basket. And this is a sector that can be overlooked in some situations, which, you know, can be very, very good in a diversified portfolio.
Well, let's hold up some danger signs and some more help. Luke Smith, financial planner at Envision Financial. Okay, we're looking at infrastructure assets. I can actually own a nut and a bolt, as you called it, of the Sydney Bridge, so to speak.
Exactly, right.
Do I have to search for those funds that have that?
No, they're individual funds. Right. So, like,
what would I go into?
So you want to look for infrastructure assets. Right. So people can Google infrastructure provider. There are a number of good providers out there. Rare Infrastructure. Magellan's a good provider. Okay. They've got good stock. But the things people really need to look for and consider when they're thinking about putting it into their portfolio are, well, where are the assets? You don't want all of your assets in one place.
No.
You want to have geographically diverse assets. So you could have something in America, something in Europe, something in Africa, something...
A bridge here, road there.
Exactly right. Yeah, okay. Toll road, port, power station. So make sure there's good diversification geographically. Also look to see if they are in first world countries.
Yes.
Okay, because then we have limited, I say with a smile, limited corruption, government policy, and also then from a valuation perspective, you've got greater protection.
You've got history too. You can check in the history, can't you?
Correct. Consider whether it should be hedged or unhedged. So consider the currency impact of where the asset is and where the fund invests. And also look at the cost. So we spoke in a show a couple of weeks ago about the ICR, or the internal cost ratio. That is the charge that the fund provider takes from the return for the privilege of giving you the service of running that fund and giving you the investment opportunity. So look at those and compare those, because they can be very, very different. And also look at the index that it compares itself to. Okay, this is a big one, because if we've got an index that says, well, we're very heavy in airports, and the index or the measure of comparison is in ports, they may not have a fair comparison of like-for-like assets. No. So make sure that the index that you compare it to, when they talk about how good they are, is relevant to the portfolio that they hold.
Because they're tortoise-like, don't expect $1 million overnight?
No, but over time you would see the value of assets increase, because they're very high barrier to entry assets. Yeah. So it's very difficult to go out and build a new road and compete with an existing structure. So that's an element of comfort for people. And generally they are increased on an annual basis under government regulation, where toll roads are increased, fees are increased, and they generally move in line with CPI. Obviously that's dependent on the asset that they hold, but they are something that people could have in the portfolio that has an income strength to it.
Yeah.
So if you're taking a pension out of your superannuation and you need to generate a 5% income return, infrastructure could be an area where you will receive more dividend income than fixed interest, for example. Now, obviously, that difference is a different rate of risk, so you need to be comfortable with your overall broader risk profile. But it's something that could form part of a property allocation in a portfolio. So when you're thinking about slicing up how you invest all of your money, you might say, right, 8 to 12% of the total portfolio for me could be in property. And that could be in a real estate investment trust in Australia. That could be in a property index. And that could also incorporate an infrastructure fund that's either domestic, international, or a combination of the two. So you've got a nice spread inside the portfolio when you're looking at the total income that's been generated that would then underline the pension payments that you take to live and do what you want.
Pretty solid, but look out for the politics of the place that you're buying into.
Yes, you've got much better chance of owning an asset that has value in a regulated country,
yes,
against something that may be war-torn and surrounded by machine guns.
And things that are on 5,000% inflation rate and that sort of
quite
stuff.
Quite possibly,
yes. So do your homework first.
Yeah, and it's like most things. You've got to look under the hood and understand, one, what's my risk profile? Two, what does it do for me? And three, what do I expect to return and what's my time frame?
Yeah, but be patient with the return.
It's not, infrastructure assets are not an in and out sort of thing. They're a long term, slowly, slowly approach that gives good income.
It is too. So infrastructure assets, you can go online. The acronym of the week, yield to maturity.
Yeah, YTM.
I'm still waiting for that.
Yeah, so am I. My yield to maturity was
Tuesday on my birthday. What's a year to maturity?
So yield to maturity is just the total rate of return from a bond or a fixed interest investment that includes the income that you'll receive as well as any change in value up to the date that it expires. So if something was $100 and you bought it at $95, you could expect it to return to $100 on its maturity. So you'll receive, in that example, a $5 uplift,
right,
as well as whatever the dividend is that it pays. When you add together the change between $95 and $100 and the dividend, that is classified as the yield to maturity on an individual asset, generally found in the fixed interest sector.
Oh, fixed interest sector. Yeah. Okay.
But so YTM is something that you see on company reports and a lot of people say, well, is that the dividend? Is that the capital? Is that... It's actually wrapping both up and saying, what would this return me if I bought it today up to the date that it matures?
Yep. So you buy it, how much you get back from it until it actually grows
combination of income and capital till it matures.
That's YTM. A few good places to go to if you want more from Envision Financial. You can go onto our YouTube.
Yeah, so YouTube we have, going. In Envision Financial Canberra. Yep. We've listen to a number of calls we've had over the weeks where people ask for some clarification of what they've heard.
Yeah.
So what we've done is we've started to record the shows, and with a head for radio, that sort of defeats the purpose of having me here.
Yeah, yeah.
So we both suffer through that. But we've then broken down the key takeouts for people so they can go away and try and research and look into things if that's of interest for them. You can also use the Knowledge Centre. So you can register for that on the website, www.envisionfinancial.com.au. Just go to Resources tab, click on the Knowledge Centre, and there's an entire library there of technical information, calculators, workflows, risk profile questionnaires, and all sorts of material on different topics, and you can drill right down into different sectors and find out what you want, and you can use that. If you've got any questions, as I say, you can contact the office and we can extend that for you, but people can have that for free. And also on Facebook, obviously, if you like Envision Financial on Facebook, we have the podcast of the radio show and then also the links to what's been happening on YouTube.
Yep.
And then also we're going to have the vlog series that will come out and go into each of the topics each week in a little bit more detail and try and sort of put a little bit of meat around it, because people come and ask a lot of questions and say, well, can you tell me a bit more about that? So we've listened to obviously the public and said, well, okay, if I can give you a bit more information and try and help you and educate you a little bit more, great, here are all the resources that you've got, and you can go to Envision Financial Canberra and a lot of that will be on YouTube, and you can stop things. We've got bullets, we've got key takeouts and all sorts of things so they can make the most of what they're listening
and
to.
And if you've got a question, ask the thing.
Look, stick it on YouTube, you know, bang me out a question. How's this? How would I use that? You can email me, luke@envisionfinancial.com.au. Shoot me a question.
There it is.
You know, all come done. In and have a chat. Doesn't cost anything.
Doesn't cost anything. First visit, 4452 Townsend Street. It's on the second floor upstairs at the end of Townsend Street in Phillip. You can book an appointment, 6260 4749. Think about infrastructure assets, and we will talk in a week.
See you next week.